Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John. Together, we are off and running on a Thursday, the day after Valentine's Day. It's February 15th, 2024. It is the Buckmaster Show. That's me, Bill Buckmaster. We're in our 14th year now with our radio program, 36th year here in the Tucson media, on the Tucson media landscape. Speaking of media landscape, our radio station, 1030 KVOI, part of a growing presence in Tucson by a company that owns the station called Bustos Media, now with five radio stations here under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for local live news and talk. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. We have our live listening. You can hear the program anywhere in the world by going to my website, buckmastershow.com, which also is the place for all of our podcasts, very conveniently archived, going back to our first show in January of 2011. Our live line for our telephone interviews, and we have a live line interview to get things rolling here, and that is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. On our live line, General Ted Maxwell. General Maxwell has led the Southern Arizona Leadership Council as president and CEO since 2018. His nearly 34 years of military service includes 15 years in active duty Air Force and an additional 19 in the Arizona Air National Guard. He retired as a major general in 2018. His final military position was as commander of the Arizona Air National Guard in 2021. Then Governor Ducey appointed the general to represent Pima County on the seven-member Arizona State Transportation Board. He's also the Arizona Transportation Board representative on the nine-member Regional Transportation Authority Board of Directors. He's also the host now of a show called Jump in Tucson. General Maxwell, you can hear him every Tuesday morning from 9 to 10 right here on KVOI, and he now joins us on the live line. General, I know you're not feeling your best, and I do appreciate you keeping our appointment via the phone. How are you?
Absolutely, Bill. I'm glad to be on the air with you still, and I really wish I was in the studio and not on the other side of the phone, but
well,
it is what it is, I guess.
It is what it is. Before we move on to transportation, the legislature, what is your take on the phase out of the A-10 aircraft, which has been a staple, really, in the skies over southern Arizona for at least a half a century? And I'm wondering about the economic impact. Could you fill our listeners in?
Well, I think we're in good shape in Tucson as far as the economic impact, because what is happening is Davis Mountain, over that same time frame as the A-10 starts to phase out, realize that when they, I know there was an article in the paper and everybody thought that meant they were going to be gone this year. That was really the first squadron that they're phasing out this year, and most of them will be put mothballed and then kept actually there at Davis Mountain, but in the Boneyard, as we lovingly refer to the facility out there that stores all of our old aircraft.
What will be the replacement mission, and will it have perhaps an equal or greater impact than the A-10, or less, a diminishing point of return?
It's going to be a different mission. It is part of a special operations wing. You're going to see more C-130s type aircraft out on the ramp. You're going to probably see more helicopters, as well as you're going to see a few more planes that look like Learjets. But there are Learjets with some pretty impressive capabilities in the electronic warfare world. So you're going to see different planes out at Davis-Monthan. As it's going to take 3 to 5 years probably for all the A-10s to disappear. But the big thing for the wing and for the region is the same number of roughly the same number of airmen. Could be a few more, could be a few less. They haven't determined the final numbers. But the size of the mission will stay effectively same as far as the footprint of the Air Force out on Davis-Monthan Air Force Base.
What about the footprint of the Arizona Air National Guard, something very close to your heart? How is their mission remaining the same, and what about their economic impact?
Their mission is remaining the same. They've got a couple squadrons of U.S. aircraft out there. They've got a test center set of aircraft out, and all F-16s, as well as some foreign aircraft on the field, because they are continuing in the training mission that they've been in for decades. You know, back in the right around the turn of the century, right around 2001, they may have been a little earlier than that. They were declared as the International Training Unit. We did a lot of that for a long time, but now it's about 50% U.S. training and 50% international. As you know, Dave, Luke Air Force Base used to be the largest F-16 training base in the world, but they've now been replaced by F-35s. And Tucson, the Morris Air National Guard Base, is now the largest F-16 base remaining in the world.
Will the F-16 make a difference in the battle in Ukraine, in your opinion, General Maxwell?
You know, that's a hard one. People have to understand sometimes there's a difference between flying aircraft like the F-16, F-35, and then effectively employing those aircraft as well. So a lot of times when folks are new to the plane, you send them back. It's going to depend how the Ukrainian government, the Ukrainian military decides to use them. And I honestly, I'm not fully aware of their timeline. I think as you've seen in the press, the Tucson unit is training the initial Ukrainian pilots to go back and be F-16 pilots. But I'm not 100% sure myself when the Ukraine's actually going to get the aircraft.
Is it a complicated aircraft with the avionics package for someone to learn that program?
The easiest way, or the best way to say it, Bill, actually, is for pilots who have flown in other aircraft before, and then you bring them over and try to teach them to fly in the F-16 with a language barrier. It can sometimes be very difficult. The Polish Air Force bought F-16s probably a little over a decade. Well, it's hard for me to believe. I've been retired 6 years, so it's definitely over a decade ago. And all the Polish pilots came through Tucson. And there were some definite lessons learned. Some of those lessons learned are helpful when we train other Eastern European partners in the F-16. But it's still a challenge. The language skills are different. The general avionics from the aircraft they may or may not have flown are different. And then really becoming proficient at it is not an overnight thing. We, you know, we don't look at most of our U.S.-trained pilots in English on the F-16. It generally takes them several hundred hours before they're going to be considered for upgrade to either to a flight lead, and then several years before they upgrade to instructor. So it's not something they can just get the training and immediately be at the top of the game. Does that mean it won't have an impact? I think that will still be seen to be determined. You just never know what the flying environment they're gonna find over there. So far, it's seemed like most of the activities over there have been through use of drones on both sides.
General Ted Maxwell is with us. He wears several hats. His main job, I guess you could say, is president and CEO of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. I want to now talk about the Arizona Department of Transportation, of which you're the representative on the 9-member regional RTA board. How are we doing with RTA Next, General Maxwell?
Well, RTA Next, we are at the point where it's really up to the 9 members of the board to take the plans we've got and come up with a solution. There's a lot going on. There's been a lot in the press lately. But remember, the board's made up of 5 mayors, to include South Tucson, Marana, Sarita, Oro Valley, and obviously the city of Tucson. The county's got a representative, and I represent the Arizona Department of Transportation and the state board. And then you also have both the Pasquiaki with Chairman Yuka Picio and the Tohono O'odham with Chairman Jose represented at that panel. We're at the point, we've got 2 plans. So there was a plan that came forward. One of the 2 plans that came forward from the Citizens Advisory Committee is still being considered. And the other plan that came forward with the collaboration of the Technical Management Committee It's we're calling it 5-1 plus. It's still being considered. What I think you're going to see is there's still a lot of negotiation, a lot of things that are going to be give and take on those two plans. I'm not sure if it will be either one of those that will go through, but it's important. And it's important for us to get to a plan by May, the May timeframe. I'm currently serving as the chair of the board, and I've asked for a off-cycle meeting in February. Then we'll have our scheduled meeting in March. And if we still don't have a plan from the RTA, I'll ask for another off-cycle meeting in April, because it's a priority. If what we lose if we don't have a plan in place by May and still want to go to the ballot in the spring of 2025 is we lose that time to go out and hear from the citizens. Now, you have the Citizens Advisory Committee, and that's got members appointed by different folks throughout the community, and PAG has selected some of them, and they come, and most of them are very engaged in transportation. But a big part of what we've got to hear is from everyone else who uses it, all the users of the road. And there was almost 200 meetings, I've been told over 200, but before the first RTA passed for citizen engagement. And then we take what we hear from them, and now we make changes and try to get a package that we know will get the majority of the community and the majority of the voters supporting it.
Some are saying, well, why do we need RTA next? And you know about funding on the Arizona Department of Transportation. People say, well, if we need money, the feds are going to come in, the state's going to come in, we've got money coming in on the horizon. That's not true, is it, General Maxwell?
Bill, you're absolutely right. It's not. And you saw it. You just look at what's going on at the state legislature now. They're facing a deficit. Well, not a deficit, but they're facing a budget that's not going to be as large as expected. There is a lot of money in last year's budget, a lot of one-time money in last year's budget. And now we're seeing the revenues not coming through. For the funding coming from the state, we've probably seen, at least for a year or two at minimum, the last opportunity to come down here. What Pima County has to remember is the money hasn't been coming down here from the state. Sure, we get this, you get this shared state revenue, which has its purposes. The county and the municipalities get their HERF dollars. And there are some federal dollars that come to PAG some of those can be used for infrastructure, but nothing to the point of what the RTA has brought us. If you look at the RTA over the last 20 years, if you add the state funding available plus the federal funding that was appropriated and then put RTA on top of it, the RTA is about three times as large as those other two combined. So it's really, for us, we need to have this regional funding. I believe strongly about that. I think Prop 479, which is Maricopa's regional funding, and it will be on the ballot this November, is incredibly critical for that region. What some people don't realize, there's been a lot of discussion over, everybody making sure we get fair shares. And we want to do that. We want to be able to explain to every voter why there's something in it for them they should get. So we want to see the municipalities get that as well. But what you can miss is sometimes people forget that we have a lot of funding that supports issues right now. Transit's been a big issue. The city of Tucson, it's a priority. They want it. And both the two plans currently have about $610 million in for transit. But a large portion of that's for the operations. If this doesn't pass, that money that's currently supporting the operations side of the SunTrans service goes away. And it would be a significant cut. So there's reasons for roadways. There's reasons for us to move around effectively in this community. And people sometimes forget how large Pima County really is compared to some other counties, not only in Arizona, but throughout the country.
We're going to take the break here in about a minute. But first, people see headlines like feds sending Arizona $95 million for the I-10 widening. The headline makes it sound like, that money just came overnight. But look what a heavy lift, General Ted Maxwell, it was to even get that done.
Bill, great point. People forget last year when we applied for that grant, a similar grant, we didn't get it. And the fact of the matter is now with that grant, and it was a grant, that mega grant that was apply for under the IIJA, which has special funding in it, with the dollars that the legislature has appropriated, again, in that one-time money, things over the last 2 years where we had surpluses, we now have enough money to complete I-10 from Phoenix to Tucson, so we'll all be three lanes. You're already going to see that. We've already issued the contract for the bridge over the Gila and its expansion from its current four lanes to six. But you're going to start seeing the work on that hopefully soon. But again, that was one-time money in the IIJA and from the state ledge. So it's not as simple as people think.
All right, General Ted Maxwell, stick around. We'll let you take a break. I do appreciate you being on the air today. I know you are not feeling your best. We'll have more with General Ted Maxwell on our live line. But first, I want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery. Exciting news up at Mona's. You can have a beer now with your lunch. They are open right now for lunch at Swan, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. You could have a beer. I think they're pouring Peroni, an Italian beer, by the bottle. Or you could have a glass of wine. They have a liquor license now, and you could have wine with your wine and orange juice. That is traditionally called a mimosa. You could have that with your breakfast. So they're really they're expanding their culinary and offering at Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. We'll have more with General Ted Maxwell right after the break. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
People who suffer from arthritis are getting real pain relief with exciting biologic therapies at QC Kinetics.
The success rate is there.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on this Thursday afternoon. Coming up tomorrow, Tom Horn will be with us, a controversial figure. He is the state superintendent of schools. Joining me in the questioning, my guest media host will be Jim Ninsel from TucsonSentinel.com. It's always interesting when we have Tom Horn with us on the show, and he'll be our Friday Focus interview. But right now we continue with General Ted Maxwell, who leads Southern Arizona Leadership Council. He's also the chair now of the 9-member Regional Transportation Authority Board, and he's a member of the State Transportation Board. And I know one of the things you like to monitor, General Maxwell, for your organization is what's going on at the legislature. Do you have any updates on your kind of, what's your take on the mood of the legislature this year?
Absolutely, Bill. It's been an interesting legislative session for sure. A couple things we got highlighted really early, and that was that the sunset reviews were going to be a big deal. With the audit that came out of the Arizona Commerce Authority, that brought up the discussion on what's the legislative role in this. Historically, the sunset reviews have almost been a 8-year for all the different departments and authorities that the governor oversees, and they work in her cabinet, her or his cabinet, in this case her cabinet. They've almost always been an 8-year rubber stamp. It's kind of been a thing you've got to let them go. This year, the legislature has decided to take a much tighter look on some of these. And the two that I think are important to watch, one is the Arizona Commerce Authority. That was established under Governor Brewer. Governor Ducey kind of put it on steroids. And Governor Hobbs has recognized how important that organization is for our continued growth and development, especially when it comes to attractions of companies to come into Arizona and bring their well-paying jobs and their capability for all of the next generations as well as the current generations to get reskilled and get good paying jobs. That one right now, I think the ACA will end up being a budget discussion. They're looking at the Arizona Senate's looking only giving them a 2-year renewal. And the challenge when you give these departments renewals is they're required to get an audit before their next renewal. So if it's a 2-year cycle, there's some things that really increase. But I think that one we may see discussed at the during the budget negotiations. The other one I just wanted to mention to your listeners is the one for ADOT. ADOT, we continually have a cycle of a 5-year plan. So I'm a big believer that it shouldn't be anything less than 6 years. It's historically been more. They're moving a bill. The bill's moving forward, just calling for it to be 4 to 6 years. But as with everything that sometimes happens, our legislature, it's getting the parties are putting some stuff in there. I should say at least the Republican Party. Senator Hoffman's started to make a movement to restrict what the Department of Transportation can do. And some of those things include can't accept or receive a grant that would increase inter or passenger rail, like the one that we've talked about before between Tucson and Phoenix. It also is putting it, and again, these still have a long way to go, but he's also putting in language that will prevent ADOT from doing anything with regards to trying to reduce carbon footprint or emissions. And then additionally, the other one in there that they talk about is the building or maintaining of public charging stations for electric vehicles. And the only reason I bring this one up, Bill, is because both that the idea of a commuter train between Tucson and Phoenix and the charging stations are all being funded by federal dollars. They are programs that were part of the IIJA. And I understand Senator Hoffman's concerns, but at the same time, this is money that's going to be spent somewhere. The commuter rail is going to go to 5 city pairs to try to increase it. And I think Tucson and Phoenix is a great way to do it. Before we spend money on building a new line or anything else, let's use the current rail and see if there is a demand. I know personally, because I go up to Phoenix enough, I would love to be able to jump on the station at Tangerine and Marana and drive the rail up to Tempe, get off, use the ride-sharing programs to get around, and then be able to get back on and drive back down. It won't be any faster than driving for me, but it sure would be a lot more productive. And I think there's going to be more people that would like to see that. And under the IJ, we'd have a 5-year opportunity with using Amtrak, the current lines, current rails. There would be some capital investment for building, you know, some stations along the way.
That's a heavy lift, though, isn't it, with this legislature?
Well, it is, and I think, you know, I do think a lot of it is they're setting things up, and there will be some conversations in, when it comes to the budget. One thing we have seen in the last 2 weeks has been a plethora of Democratic bills getting hearings in committees and Democratic bills moving forward, both in the education space and in the health and the health and housing committees. It seems like some folks are starting to realize up there, if they do want to have a relatively quick legislative session, and if they want to get to the to a budget that they can all agree on, it's going to take some collaboration across the aisles. And that was Nicole Braz in SALC does all our tracking of our bills, and she goes, there are a lot of bills Democratic bills getting hearings. And the easiest way historically has been you just don't let a bill from the opposite party come to a hearing. But that's not happening this year. So it's going to be interesting to watch for the next couple months.
All right, General Ted Maxwell, we'll listen for your work on KVOI with your show on Tuesday, 9 to 10, on the Jump in Tucson show. Thank you, General Maxwell. I hope you feel better. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. I always appreciate being on your show.
Thank you very much. We'll take a break right here. We're going to talk with UA climate scientist Dr. Zach Guido right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Whether you've considered an all-inclusive luxury cruise, an expedition adventure, or a relaxing river cruise, come to Bon Voyage Travel's annual showcase on March 3rd at the Hilton El Conquistador. Presentations will be offered throughout the day to provide you a chance to hear more about these travel brands and their exciting offers. Bill Buckmaster and I will be teaming up to present the travel trends of 2024. Visit bvtravel.com for more information on Bon Voyage Travel's free showcase on March 3rd.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. I'm going to be at that travel showcase doing our thing with Ryan Hansen of Bon Voyage Travel. I love doing that show. Ryan and I usually do a half-hour kind of Q&A with the audience at the travel show, and this year it is Sunday, the 3rd of March, out at the El Conquistador. So that's going to be fun, and any travel fans in the Buckmaster listening audience, love to see you out there. I'd also love to see our listeners over at Green Things, 3384 East River Road. What a great job Jan and Jack, the owners, do. That 13-acre site, I was by there yesterday, looking so good. It's just chock full of, it's loaded with greenery, living up to the name Green Things. And plus, we've had some great rain. The plants are really happy. Go buy Green Things. Their website's greenthingsaz.com. And when you're there, pick up some great pottery for your plants at Zocalo Village. Their website, zocalovillage.com. And that business is there on site. When we do our telephone interviews like we did for the first half hour, that's presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Zach Guido, though, is not on the telephone. He is with me in the studios, the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. Zach is the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate, assistant research professor at the Arizona Institute for Resilience. The acronym is AIR, appropriately enough, which coordinates interdisciplinary groups of students, faculty, projects across the UA campus, from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water resources, and beyond. Because, Zach, it really, climate kind of covers everything, doesn't it?
It does. It certainly does. It's an interdisciplinary group.
There you go. Good to see you again. You've been traveling. I mean, you travel a lot for business. I mean, you've been to Bangladesh a couple of times. Three times now?
Three times?
Yeah, three times. But you just went skiing up in Colorado. That was more of a personal trip to go do some skiing, right?
That's correct.
How was it up there? I mean, they've had some good snow.
They have. And you know, it's funny. So I grew up in the Northeast, grew up skied ever since two. And you know, I found myself living in the desert and try to maintain a connection to the big mountains and
did
snow.
Did I hear you say you were on skis at 2 years old?
I started when I was two. Yep. Yep. Yep.
Where were you? Maine or what?
Vermont.
Oh, Vermont.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And every year, so I try to put in play like my study of climatology and weather. And so we make a decision within the 7-day forecast window of where to go in, you know, Colorado, Utah, sometimes California, and even up to Idaho.
You've been up to the Northwest?
Up to the Northwest, yeah. And we wait for the
I
forecast.
I think you went to, up into the Canadian Rockies one year, up to Banff and that area.
We went to Whistler. Is in British Columbia.
That's great up there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and so we were watching the weather this year because, you know, it has been fairly dry across California up until about the beginning of February, really. Mm-hmm. And then there were these two massive systems, atmospheric rivers that came in, and we were sort of watching the weather and trying to target where we were going based on that precipitation. Settled on Colorado, which had some nice snow. And if you look at the snowpack patterns across the West, the interior West, Utah and Colorado really has fared better. And actually Northern Arizona too. than you know, California, despite the atmospheric rivers and, you know, the feet of snow that was dumped in the Sierras, across the Sierras in the last 2 weeks. They're still fairly below average.
They are 25% below average, and that comes after two huge atmospheric river events that dumped record amount of rain in the Big Sur, the central area, L.A., San Diego, just copious amounts of rain. The Bay Area had a lot of rain. But now the snow, yeah, they got some snow, but not kind of like in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know if it hits the Sierra and it just wasn't as productive this time, but
yeah. So these two events, so early February and then, you know, 5-6 days later, mm-hmm. Basically what these atmospheric rivers are, they are what they sound like. They're these long areas of concentrated water vapor in the atmosphere. They can be, you know, 3 kilometers deep, thousands of kilometers long, so stretching across the Pacific Basin, and, you know, up to like 500, 600, 700 kilometers wide. And they generally bring in large fractions of precipitation across the West. And so I think something on the order of 25 to 75% of the snowpack, you know, is generated from these atmospheric river of events. And they are the major mechanism, thinking about climatologically, they are the major mechanism that brings water from the tropics up toward the subtropics. So what ends up happening when you get the patterns set up right and you get a low pressure system that sort of with the flow, the atmospheric flow rotating counterclockwise, they can hurl subtropical moisture or tropical moisture up into the Western U.S. And when that water sort of strikes topography, it has to rise, and as it rises in the atmosphere, the atmosphere cools. It can hold less water, and it rains out. And so, a lot of times, the precipitation happens on the sort of western side of the Sierra Mountain, and leaves less for the interior west on the dry side. And that's why Arizona, you know, doesn't see as much rainfall from these events. Although if like the orientation of the storms is right and that water vapor can sort of thread the coastal mountain range and enter into.
Yeah, we kind of get the leftovers.
You get the
and
leftovers.
We've done pretty well. 30-inch snowpack, according to the Salt River Project up in the Arizona high country. That's very good news. We've had very good rain, a couple of very good productive storms. I was just looking at the latest totals. We're at about 3 inches for the year. That's way above average. Normally, we would be an inch and a quarter normal to date. So, you know, they've been productive. Things are drying out a bit in that question that, first of all, the El Nino drives the atmospheric rivers. Can we say that?
It doesn't drive it, but it influences.
Influence.
Yeah. So we tend to, the Western U.S. tends to experience increased frequency of atmospheric rivers during an El Nino event.
Yes,
and a decreased frequency during a La Nina event. So we're in an El Nino event. We're in a very strong, fifth strongest on record El Nino event. So we would expect there to be an increase in atmospheric rivers. It's also important to note that not all El Ninos are created equal, and like the pattern of sea surface temperature warming that is characteristic of El Nino, sometimes it's more to the east, sometimes it's more to the central. That also influences the frequency of atmospheric rivers and where they strike landfall, whether it's more to the north or more to the south. So in eastern Pacific, I might get this wrong, but when there's an eastern Pacific type El Nino event, that is to say when the warming of the sea surface temperatures is more shifted toward South America, the frequency of atmospheric rivers tends to be a little bit further south. So the point is generally speaking, El Ninos bring a higher frequency than La Ninas, but then there's some nuance within an El Nino event, and really like the character of that specific El Nino event can influence the position and whatnot of the atmospheric rivers.
And the El Nino doesn't always translate into precipitation. Case in point, what's going on in Chile and Argentina, they're having some of the biggest wildfires in those countries' history.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the weather is an extremely difficult thing to predict, and we try to extract information and predictive information where we can, and what goes on in the tropical Pacific Ocean has some influence in the weather patterns broadly across the globe. It's not perfect. You know, it adds a little bit of value if people play cards. It's like knowing one, or if you have five opponents, maybe it's like knowing the cards of two of those opponents that are that they're holding, right? So it's not a slam dunk. It doesn't guarantee an outcome, but there's information there, and it's just the nature of trying to predict a very integrated, complex system like the weather. That is, it's not just the atmosphere; it's also what's going on in the seas, sea surface temperatures, for example, or the position of the continents, like all of the. What's going on in the Arctic, all of these things matter, and you're trying to sort of trying to be predictive. And I would say that like the weather forecasting, right, like our ability to forecast the weather is quite strong, you know, 1 to 5 days in advance. And then it sort of drops off, and there's a little bit of prediction out to about day 10. But anything beyond that, we're sort of guessing.
Well, some of the services, I won't name the name, but they're saying a 30, but one of them's doing a 90. That is a 90-day forecast. Yeah,
so
a 90-day.
We tend to
three
think,
months.
Right, and so that's seasonal forecasting. It's different than weather forecasting. The seasonal forecasting ends up using largely these phenomenon that evolve much slower, like what's going on in the tropical Pacific Ocean. And that can add some knowledge to what's going to happen. It hedges our bets one way or the other. And so we tend to think of these in probabilities, like the upcoming January, February, March season, you know, has a 50% chance of being above average, right? It also has a 50% chance. Well, let's say a 60% chance of being above average temperature. You know, and so these are slight shifts in the odds of what the upcoming season will look like. What they don't do is they don't say on March 2nd there'll be a storm, right? Like so it's a much coarser, blurred view of the future than a weather forecast, which is able to sort of have much more predictive power at an hourly time scale at a particular location, let's say.
And those have become really accurate, I think. Some of these 24-hour predictions on precipitation, I've been watching them during these last two kind of weather events that we had. They have been really accurate about the rain will begin in such and such minutes, right? And then they will say that it will end at, you know, like 11 o'clock in the morning. And within a few minutes, it seems to be pretty darn accurate.
It's really impressive.
Yeah.
It's not always. Some forecasts are harder to do than others. So, you know, we have to acknowledge that. They've made massive advancements in the last, you know, 3-4 decades about the ability to predict, particularly at like the closer you are to real time,
yeah,
the easier it is to predict, because you know we have a lot of observations of what's going on, right? And the environment is acting a bit chaotically. So it's like the further out you go, small changes actually
right.
expand. And that's why it becomes much more difficult. And the uncertainty much greater, like 3, 5, 7 days out in the future.
All right. Well, we continue with University of Arizona climate scientist Dr. Zach Guido. Is El Nino kind of running out of gas here in southern Arizona? We'll talk with Zach about that after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It'd be a great weekend to get away to Silver City. The weather looks really good. We're going to be in the mid-70s over the weekend here in southern Arizona. So it's going to be cooler because of the elevation over in Silver City, but still very spring-like to do hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Jump on the motorcycle, jump in the car or truck, three-hour drive approximately. Not bad. Website, southwestnewmexico.org. You'll be very tempted when, and I think surprised, when you see all the incredible activities over in that southwest corner of the land of enchantment. There's also some really fun places to hang out in Silver City, some great places to get that have been around like 50, 60 years for New Mexican cuisine. Do you want red or do you want the green chili? Depending on... which is going to be, what's the chef preparing today? Is it, which is going to be the hotter one? Some people want the hot, some want the mild. So depends. Zach Guido is with us, University of Arizona climate scientist. We did have the very productive rain. We had a couple of very cold nights early in January where I had to cover things up. But these other storms that moved through have typically not had that much cold air on the backside, which I'm happy for because I don't really like the freezing temperature because I do have to cover all my plants. It seems like we're now in kind of a dry spell. Maybe high pressure is built in over our area. Can we tell if the El Nino may be losing a little bit of its zip?
Well, weather happens. I will say that to start with. So El Nino and La Nina's influence on the weather is not the complete story, but this is a time of year when there's a transition from the current state of El Nino to it sort of the temperatures will cool in an El Nino. So El Ninos are characterized by warmer than average temperatures in the eastern tropical Pacific, central and eastern tropical Pacific. And this is a time period where those temperatures will sort of go back toward more average conditions. So it's historically a period where we see El Nino sort of coming off its apex. Going out in the future, you know, what looks to be happening is there's increased chances that we'll transition out of an El Nino to neutral conditions. And then in the fall and into the winter of 2024-2025, a La Nina, which the transition from El Nino to La Nina is not uncommon. So we can think about and maybe keep an eye on what, you know, the future winter will look like. But it is a time when El Nino transitions. You know,
and it's a time we transition in southern Arizona. I often say that we get the autumn, the last place in North America for the leaves to change. You know, over by the Tanque Verde and the Rito, you see the big cottonwoods changing. And that's like a December when you see the golden leaves. We're the last place for the leaves to turn, and we're the first place for spring to happen. You can almost feel like spring's coming right now here.
Well, right. And if you look at like the sort of temperature trend, like now we're on the upward swing. Mm-hmm. So days on average will be getting
more sunlight. It's getting light earlier in the morning. I heard the birds starting to sing this morning at 6:30.
I will say this, though. Don't put an end to the winter just yet.
I won't, because March can be we can get snow here in March.
Right. So I'm looking at Tucson's airport, just to give people some data. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so from the beginning of October, let's say, the October to mid-February period, you know, we're an inch and a half at Tucson Airport above its historical average for that time. And in fact, if we got no more rain at that station for the remainder of the winter, we would be just at average.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We tend to get in March a little under an inch of rain on average. And of course, we have still half a month of February. So, you know, I still say there's, you know, 45 days, 50, 60 days of winter.
I always
left.
Think of St. Patrick's Day as kind of where we get sort of spring, really start the transition where you can feel, oh my, we may have summer coming earlier than usual, but it can get warm.
It can.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's getting warmer and warmer earlier and earlier.
Yes.
So,
so.
And we have been seeing a trend toward losing a precipitation event in the late winter.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That being said, I think like just in terms of like the Tucson area, but you know, southern Arizona writ large, like it's been a decent winter.
So we're out of the drought, according, you know, I look at those drought monitoring maps, only a small portion over on the kind of the eastern boundary of Arizona, New Mexico are still in a drought. The rest looks pretty good right now. But, you know, where we live in the Southwest, that could change in like a month.
Well, that is true. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and again, it takes one season, either the monsoon or, you know, the winter for it to be, you know, significantly dry for that drought picture, mm-hmm. at least the short-term drought picture, to change substantially.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we're in a long-term drought when we think of like water and water supply and that mm-hmm. sort of thing.
And the reservoirs still aren't anywhere near what they used to be.
Correct. Yeah, we probably will never go back to those halcyon days of like the late 90s. Yeah.
Any final thoughts, Zach? I've got about a minute.
No, just, you know, it's, you know, the climate is always, you know, fun to talk about, and there's never a dull, you know, even average years are anything but average. So.
And we haven't talked about monsoon yet. It's kind of early. But.
It is. It's for me, it's never too early to think about the monsoon.
No.
But yeah, we've got a couple more. Let's see what the winter snowpack does and, mm-hmm. and how that comes in, you know, in another month and a half. And again, across the West, it's not a bad picture for the interior West. California is much below average. And, you know, there's some storms on the horizon and another, you know, month, 2 months of snowpack. Peak snowpack tends to occur in the 1st of April. So we've got a little bit of time there to see what the water situation is going to work. Maybe when we come back.
Always changing
our
environment, right? All right, Zach Guido, always a pleasure. We'll see you in, going to book you for March. So we'll see you in about a month. Thanks.
Fantastic.
Zach.
Thanks for having
All
me.
All right. On behalf of Dr. Zach Guido and John, engineering and producing our show on the other side of the glass, John knows about, Zach was talking about New England winters. John remembers his days fondly in the snowy Maine growing up. Oh, boy. Glad he's not there right now. I know John is not happy about that. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.